Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
Well, training camp is over. Training camp is over. The 49ers are now into what they call regular season mode. And I'm joined by NBC Sports Bay Area's Mindy Bach. And Mindy, are you in regular season mode?
No, because I haven't seen a regular season team show up yet. It seems so strange. You know, there's still so many things the 49ers need to work on or at least put together in these final two preseason games. And they still have close to 100 players on a roster, including all the injured players. So just not knowing who the final 53 are. So even though technically we're out of training camp days, it still seems like there's a lot of training camp left.
It's definitely a work in progress, the 2017 49ers are. And that goes for both sides of the ball. On one of our last podcasts, or actually the last podcast, I had Kyle Shanahan on, who, of course, is the head coach, but he's also the offensive coordinator. And on this week's podcast, I'm going to be joined by Robert Saleh, the 49ers defensive coordinator. So you know, he basically has autonomy on the defensive side of the ball. And so it'll be fun to talk to him about how he got to this point to be a defensive coordinator and his vision for the 2017 49ers. Anything to you stand out about the 49ers defensive side of the ball?
The one thing that I hear all the players say that I really just want to hear his reasoning and explanation, because I think it's a good thing, is there are only a dozen play calls for them. That is a very simplistic defense. There's not a lot of thinking, which allows for more reacting. And the players really responded to that. But there are so many ways you can do that. Obviously, Vic Fangio had some of that same philosophy when he was here, but his talent overall, I think, was so much higher. You know, you have Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman there. There were just so many people on the defensive front with Justin Smith, and you know, you can go on and on. So Robert Saleh bringing a similar ideology, just keep the defense more simple. I'm just curious how he sees that playing into this group of players he has and how he developed that philosophy overall.
Yeah, when you look at what the 49ers were with Vic Fangio, I mean, it was a veteran group, and it was pretty much a finished product that Fangio inherited, a team that basically underachieved, although those defenses were good, but underachieved. But I mean, underachieved under, you know, Mike Nolan and Mike Singletary. And now, you know, Robert Saleh, young coach, 38 years old, comes in here and he's got some young talent. And that's going to be probably the story of the 49ers defense for this year, is how that young talent develops on the defensive line with Solomon Thomas, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Reuben Foster. And that secondary is still pretty young. One guy that, you know, was a draft pick a few years ago now, Eric Reed. He seems to really be finding his niche close to the line of scrimmage as a hitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to that point, where we're talking about the defense and keeping it simpler, I'm wondering, because you have that young talent with a few veterans spaced in here and there, is that do you keep the you keep it simpler now so they become so well versed in what they need to do and then add concepts later as they get it? Because, for instance, you look at Adante Johnson, fourth year in the league, fourth different defensive coordinator, fourth different head coach. So how many different things has he gone through? So let him worry only about a few things right now and then maybe introduce more later. I don't know if Saul is going to do that. Where you have an Eric Reed, to answer your question, who has seen it all, kind of understands now the role and where he needs to be, because he's in that prime year you know, between years 4 and 6, when players in the league really start to get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Some get it earlier than others, but usually it's about year 3, 4, 5 that they really come into their own, and that's the sweet spot that Eric Reed's in right now.
And he's also, you know, he said this, you know, he's a bigger safety. He feels like he's going to be asked to do things that he should be doing that kind of accentuates his positives. And this is a big year for him because, you know, 49ers have a lot of cap room. And the way you spend cap room is to reward your own players. And Eric Reed is in a position without a long-term deal where if he has a good season, if the 49ers believe that he is part of the future of this team, that they can reward him with a long-term contract. One of the things about Seattle's defense has always been, and that's what this defense is based on, Seattle's defense. In talking to the 49ers defensive coach, or I'm sorry, offensive coaches, when the 49ers were good and the Seahawks were, you know, right there with them, the 49ers never felt like Seattle out-schemed them, that they felt like Seattle does what they do, they have good players, and they do it very well. So I would think that that's what Robert Saleh will want to do, is just, you know, kind of turn his players loose and hope that, you know, these young guys develop. And, you know, Reuben Foster's flying around, and those front four defensive linemen can get turned loose and get to the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I understand the scheme with Seattle, because you looked at that defensive front, I mean, across the board, and then all the names they kept bringing in, from a Cliff Averill to a Michael Bennett, you know, and then in the Legion of Boom in the backfield there, it makes sense to keep it simple because they were so talented. So I understand the philosophy. I do wonder, though, how it will translate here just to a younger team, more inexperienced across the board with some key veteran pieces.
Bill Walsh always used to say, you can scheme up offense, you need players on defense. Yeah. Now, of course, that was Bill Walsh saying it, because Bill Walsh was the best at scheming up offense. But yeah, I think that's kind of the philosophy that the 49ers of the past used too, that you get good players and you turn them loose and you let them fly to the ball.
Well, and if this training camp, it's a small sample size, but we've seen the emergence of Dante Johnson, seen what he's been able to do this camp, and he's been very good. And we've seen Rashard Robinson kind of take that next step and being aggressive. Sometimes it's cost him, but he said once he makes the mistake, like he did in the first preseason game, he comes back and he's been able to recognize the same formations or the same routes or the same type of offensive schemes against him and make the adjustment. So that's what the preseason games are for. So there have been some bright spots. I mean, even you look at a Lorenzo Jerome coming in here, you know, the undrafted free agent safety out of St. Francis, where everyone's like, where, who, what? And he comes in, obviously he's a talented player, but given his opportunity due to some injuries, he's been able to really make a mark. And part of me does wonder, okay, there's talent, but what part of it is also the defense that they, once again, they're not thinking too much. They can just react.
I think the cornerbacks are a little bit of a concern because, you know, there's really not a proven player there. I think we all believe that Rashard Robinson is going to be a really good player, but he's going to take his lumps. You know, he's not consistent yet. He's up and down. And then Dante Johnson appears to be the front runner for that other cornerback spot. And then, you know, the one guy in the secondary that I think the team was kind of looking to be the guy back there, the racer, Jimmy Ward, and they got him back this week. So it's good that, a first-round draft pick from 2014, Jimmy Ward, who played cornerback last year, appears to be a good fit at this free safety position, but he hasn't been on the field since the offseason program, so how he develops quickly and gets ready for the regular season will probably go a long way in determining how this defense comes together.
Yeah, and also what they say, if you kind of have questions about the defensive secondary, you counter with a strong defensive front. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, how that comes about for this first regular season game. Is that defensive front going to show up as people expect? How long will that take?
Yeah, and what kind of rotation? Because there's a lot of guys there. And we could go through, you know, the starters and the guys. You know, I mentioned Thomas, Armstead, Buckner, Earl Mitchell will be a base down guy. Then you have, you know, where are these other guys going to fit? Doomerville and Aaron Lynch, yeah. And is Ahmad Brooks going to make the team? Is Eli Harold going to make the team? There are a lot of options there. Quinn Dial, is he going to make the team? There are a lot of options.
The guy they just signed, whose name I can't say.
Sinderic Marks.
Sinderic, there you go.
Sinderic Marks, who comes over from Jacksonville, was with Jacksonville for 4 years, was with Robert Saleh for 3 years, so he knows the system pretty well. So, I mean, this guy's getting a late start, but he's an 8-year vet, and, you know, whether he makes the team or not, I don't know. He's, like I said, he's getting a late start, but the 49ers just wanted to add more competition along that defensive front.
Okay. Well, let's hear what Mr. Saleh has to say.
All right. Mindy Bach, thank you very much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast. And now, here's Robert Saleh, the 49ers' first-year defensive coordinator. Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast. And I guess the first thing is, you know, how does a 4-year college starter, a tight end, become a defensive coordinator in the NFL?
You know, it's been a cool process, you know, going through life, I guess. But I started out as an offensive GA with Bobby Williams. And when John L. Smith came in the following year.
That's at Michigan State.
At Michigan State. Moved me over to the defensive side of the ball. And from there, that's where I stayed.
And so what does it help you, you know, having, and I know you played defensive line in high school.
Yep.
Does it help you to kind of know how offense thinks as a defensive coordinator from that sense, that background?
I think it does, but even as a player, you still don't know what you think you know. For me, the greatest benefit was as a defensive GA, I was still able to go into those offensive meetings and still learn. So when Kyle was a coordinator at Houston, I'd be able to sit in with them a little bit and just listen and see what they did with regards to their scheme. Same thing in Seattle. Got a chance to go listen to a couple of meetings, and you always try to learn. And that's where I, you know, still probably don't know nearly enough. And you'll never know as much as an offensive guy, but feel like we got a good grasp defensively.
So you went to Northern Michigan.
Yep.
That's where Tom Izzo went to school. That's where Steve Mariucci went to school. So
Lloyd Carr.
So there's some lineage there with coaches. How going through those 4 years, you're a finance major, correct?
Yep.
Well, what point along those were you thinking, you know, where football kind of fit into your life after Northern Michigan?
I'm being honest. That was my whole intent, was to get into coaching immediately after college. I didn't. I wanted to go make a little bit of money, but it was pretty quick where I realized that if I don't take advantage of my youth and my opportunity, then I'm probably going to regret it later.
And so at that point, when you got out of college, were you married?
No. When you had a high school sweetheart, and once I decided to go coaching, it was over.
Okay, so you grew up in Dearborn.
Yep.
And then you took this job pretty much right out of college, working at Comerica Bank.
Yep.
And then obviously there was something big that happened.
Yep.
And I guess it was an epiphany for you that you're in the wrong line of work?
So, like I said, I wanted to get into coaching. I went into the business world. 9/11 happens, and it just, you know, over time you just think, and you get to a point where you just break. And and my breaking point was the Super Bowl, to realize that I was not doing what I was supposed to be doing or what I wanted to do, and that, you know, and it all started with that moment.
You seem to be a very emotional guy. I've seen you on the sideline. It's kind of easy to read you. Probably not a great poker player, I would imagine. But, I mean, that had to be, you know, 9/11 happens, and your brother, David, is working in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. I mean, what was that day like for you? I mean, it's been 16 years now. What did that do to you and your family?
You know, for me, the hardest part for me was to see what my mother would look like if she lost one of her children, and that was the hardest part. And going through and just waiting for a phone call, and to go through that's my biggest memory of the whole thing is my mom. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, seeing my brother finally getting that phone call and all that and the relief.
So he, I mean, it's an amazing story. I mean, the first plane hits the North Tower.
Yep.
He's in the South Tower on the 61st floor and starts heading down. And I believe he's even told, no, go back to your office.
Yeah.
And great instincts. Just, I mean, it's an incredible story.
He kept going. And he's lucky he did.
And so that to you was kind of like, life's too short. I need to do what I want to do.
No doubt. For me, it was my dad wanted to get into coaching, and my dad chased money, and he always talked about how he wished he stayed into coaching. He was tied to Bill McCartney, and he was part of those guys for the high school years, and he just kind of left them as they went, and from a coaching perspective, and then so he always looked back and said, God, I wonder how far I could have taken it and what I could have been. But he chased money, and so here I was in that same situation. And if it wasn't for their support, my mom and my dad, even my brother's support, then who knows? And like I said, there's a lot of people from the city of Dearborn, it takes a village to raise a child, that helped me get to get through those first few years where you don't get paid very much money and trying to pursue this dream.
Well, you left a pretty lucrative job right out of college.
Yeah.
And so there was no pushback from the family saying, what are you doing?
Mm-mm, not at all.
Your dad played football in college as well. So
he did.
Is that where the love of football came from? And tell me a little bit about your dad.
So my dad looks like Bald Bull from Nintendo. Mike Tyson's punch out. But great human being. Hands like he's got a couple of cinder blocks for hands. But my family, the lineage of football in my family runs very, very deep. In my high school, at one point there was a Sala who was on the football team from, I believe, 64 to my last year, 96. There was a Sala on the football team at Fortson High School in Dearborn. And so, like I said, just he's a loves football. That's
Do you know where his love of football came from? He was born in.
He was born here. Went to lived in Lebanon for a couple of years. Came back. His love of football came from his uncle who lives in Florida, and they just kind of got. He introduced it to him, and it just kind of stuck for him, and it went from him to his brothers. My uncle who just passed, he played at Michigan State. I had another uncle who played at Northern Michigan with Steve Mariucci on the national championship team. And so it just kept going down and passing down and became a tradition that we're a football family.
What is it about football? I know there's been a lot of talk recently about what football does, brings people from all walks of life together in the locker room. Is that part of the allure of football, just the camaraderie and everyone kind of getting together, and what happens outside in the real world is kind of out there and it's kind
that,
of a vacuum.
I'll say that for all sports. Sports pulls you in and teaches you one about accountability, not only for yourself but for other people that are counting on you to be on point. The football part of it, we're a very aggressive family by nature, and football is a really good release where you can legally get after somebody. And so for us, it's I could see why football attached to our family. We're, like I said, we're very, very aggressive people, especially my uncles. I mean, you walk around, even now, I get a smack in the back of the head. I'm a grown man, uncle's still smacking me around, but it's like a natural fit, you know. Probably too aggressive to play basketball. Baseball's too slow. Even though I love baseball, it's a second favorite sport. Golf. Everyone's trying to beat up the golf. But, it was just a perfect sport for our family.
Well, football is. I mean, I don't know how you would describe it. It has to be kind of controlled rage, right?
That's right.
And even on those, what do you have printed on the gold footballs at the defensive? Extreme violence. And so some people might kind of shudder at the words extreme violence, but it's extreme violence with discipline.
No doubt.
And in the context of the sport. So how do you go about, getting these guys fired up and ready to hit somebody, but also you know, thinking clearly?
I think we have a really cool teaching system with how to tackle, and the way to do it legally, where one, you're protecting yourself, two, you're having respect for your opponent, but three, you can maintain the violence at which the game was intended to play. And being able to show clips of what it's supposed to look like, being able to have drills to show them what it's supposed to feel like, that, I think, all-encompassing, can keep us, can help us maintain the violence that the sport was intended for, but at the same time, still having respect for our opponent so we're not delivering cheap shots. And at the same time as that, making sure that we're staying healthy and keeping our head clean so that way we can have extended careers. And I think there's I think our style of teaching and the way that we approach it is really cool.
And how have the players adapted to that, do you think?
I think they like it. I know
you guys have a really physical training camp.
We did. We had a very, very
we're popping.
It was. And that's credit to Kyle. And usually offensive coaches don't want that type of violence from a camp, but he's all in. He's seen what it could do for his offense when they were in Atlanta, and so he's it's a credit to him to preach that. But
and I want to note here too that, I mean, there were some injuries in training camp, but the kind of injuries that were out there were kind of more freak stuff, not because of taking the hitting to an extreme.
No doubt, because we're still not tackling. The physicality came within putting your shoulder, really getting teaching tackling without tackling. Basically getting up to the thud part of the tackle to make sure that we're always putting ourselves in position to tackle. Malcolm's injury was the biggest one, and it was a freak accident. And, I mean, no one even fell on him. It was just, trying to rip the ball out on a ball carrier. And unfortunate what happened to him, but I don't think it was I don't think it was because of the way we were practicing.
Yeah. So, looking at your background, the coaching staffs you've been on, have you always been on the field, or have you been upstairs as well?
During my quality control years, I was in the box as a linebackers coach. I was on the field.
And now, as a defensive coordinator, you could be, there's two choices here. You could be in the booth, kind of the sanitary environment, thinking clearly, your reading glasses on, all that kind of, the cerebral part. Or you could be on the field with your play sheet in hand and slapping guys on the backside. What did you decide to do?
Prefer on the field. Even when we were, I'll give you the story, in Seattle, we were in the box. We would open up the windows anyway to immerse ourselves in the game. We want the intensity. For me personally, some of the offensive guys didn't like it, but I thrive on the intensity of the field. It helps me think faster. I think if it got too mellow and too slow, it just might bore me. So being on the field, being with the players, you're there with them. You guys are all going it. You're in it together. We're a family. We've got each other's back, and to do it from the box, I wouldn't be able to control myself. I'd be way too wound up.
And also, I would think you seem to be a pretty good read of people and character. And I mean, it seems like you would benefit too by looking at one of your players in the eye and getting a feel for, if he's having a bad game, why is he having a bad game? Should he sit? Should he get the next guy in? You probably have a better finger on the pulse of the team on the sideline.
I think so. To me, defense is a very emotional part of football. Very emotional. You got to be a very emotional football player to play defense. And how you harness that emotion to maximize your ability is always the trick. And being down there on the field to feel the emotion and feel the temperament of the team, to me, it is very important because they need to. They're usually self-starters, but there's going to be lulls like a sudden change. Sudden change is not a time to go sulk onto the football field and say, oh man, we gave up the ball again. It's, in my mind, it's another opportunity to go rep our style so we can attack the ball, so we can play with extreme violence, so we can play with the speed that we do. Players should thrive and be excited that it's another opportunity to showcase how much they're whooping the man in front of them. That's the mindset as we take the field, and you can feel it on the football field, and to be down there and make sure they're always reminding them that we don't play that. We play the game, and when we step on the field, we're reminding everybody how good we are, and that's the mindset.
So, you were on the Jaguars coaching staff after winning a Super Bowl ring with Seattle. And then Gus Bradley gets fired. Doug Marrone is the head coach. Where were you when the phone call came from Kyle about the opportunity here?
He and I were communicating throughout the whole process of the offseason. And so I was just sitting at home.
You guys knew each other from being at
Houston
together.
It was going through the process, and like I said, it's well documented. I wasn't the first choice, but I was still in contact with him as a possible position coach. And to have the opportunity, you know, it was never given to me. I just gave me a chance to interview. And in the back of my mind, I knew if he would submit to an interview, there was no way he wouldn't, because I just felt very confident with the information that I had on hand.
So initially it's for a position coach. And then as time went on, you started thinking along the lines of, I'm your best bet for defense coordinator?
For me, I always felt like it, even though I was still trying to help him, because I'm all in for Kyle, and I wanted him to feel comfortable and feel like he's putting forth the best group of men to lead another group of men. So I was all in with him from the beginning. So even if it meant me setting aside what I wanted to help him get a person that he felt comfortable with and still help him through the whole process, I was all in on that. Which he knew. But when he, you know, just given me that opportunity to interview, there was no way in heck, in my mind that he would have any other choice.
How detailed were you in presenting Kyle with the plan of, this is what a Robert Saleh defense is going to look like?
I don't want to pat myself on the back. I feel like I'm very detailed. No stone left unturned. Never do something just to do something. Make sure it's thought through, so that way we've got every T crossed, every I dotted. And to present what I had, I guess it was overly detailed, because he just looked at it and goes, geez. And so it was just something that I was always prepared for.
And this is like practices planned months and months ahead of time, what's going to be incorporated into it.
From the off season, how we're going to meet as a staff, what we're going to install first, how we're going to install it, our coaches' walkthroughs. You know, we went out there, did 7-on-7 as just coaches, so they could feel what the players are feeling, so they could understand better what they're seeing with their eyes. But to go through that whole process and explain to them how we'll do it and all the different ways, helping him understand, because he came from Atlanta, where he felt like he was able to expose everything about our three deep. And to show him that he's still missing a few things from that there's a lot of things that people haven't seen yet that we're way ahead of from a teaching progression, helped him understand. And then to show him the little things that we can do differently to even help the system become stronger, stuff that we plan on unveiling for the season. So,
You worked for Richard Smith, you worked Gus Bradley. You were Dan. Were you Dan Quinn?
I was with DQ.
Dan Quinn, obviously Pete Carroll. How much is a compilation of what those people taught you and ideas that they presented to you, and how much of the 49ers defense is your own imprint of this is what I feel, and maybe those other guys didn't do this, but this is what I feel.
I think a lot of what you're going to see is might look similar, but there's very there's nuances that are very, very different. I'm very confident that it's going to be different. But what I did pick up from those guys is they're unbelievable leaders, each one with their own trait that makes them special and unique to the other. Pete and how he dealt with his with the players and the staff, and Gus and the way he dealt with the players and the staff, and DQ and how he handled it. Ken Norton Jr. is a linebackers coach who I still think of as a tremendous mentor. Chris Richard, Rocky Seto, all of them together really help formulate an idea and what it's supposed to look like, being able to take and pull from a little bit of each of them to create an idea of what I hope is going to be pretty cool defense.
I kind of want to go through the different layers of the defense and kind of get your thoughts on what you expect from these position groups. Let's just start off with the secondary. You know, Jimmy Ward is back now. I know he's kind of being considered the eraser at free safety. What do you expect from the secondary? What kind of style?
From the secondary, it's going to be a common theme throughout. But with the secondary, I expect them to be ball hawking, play fast, communicate, and great tacklers who understand leverage, who understand the strike zone, and who can truly intimidate the people who teams who try to expose the middle of the field.
And the linebackers, Reuben Foster is a youthful, enthusiastic guy. You got Navarro Bowman, the perennial All-Pro. What do you expect from that linebacker group?
Same thing. For them, with communication, there's a lot of stress that we put on the hook, our linebackers in the pass game and run game. And the big thing for linebackers, we want to see them run and hit. Just don't ever stop running. And if it's in the white, you hit it. If it's between the whistle, you hit it. And that's the mindset of the linebacker that we're hoping to develop.
Which, you said in there that Reuben and Navarro, you're confident that they can
do whatever.
They can cover. They can do it all.
They can do it all.
Yeah. And then defensively, a defensive line. Interesting to hear you talk about Tank Carradine as being an elite six technique. Can you explain what that is, and also the rest of that defensive line? What do you expect from that?
With Tank, when I say elite, I'm talking as a rundown six technique, someone who just can really dominate his edge and own the line of scrimmage. He's a different body type than what Red Bryant was back in the day, but he gets the same result in terms of just knockback, winning on an edge, where running solid side run game is just not as easy to do against someone like him as it is other six techniques throughout the league. As a defensive line from a whole, we want very violent. We want a very attacking front. We want a front that gets out of the stack and just are relentless to the football. But we're looking for a group of guys that have a relentless pursuit to be violent, to just physically embarrass the man in front of them.
And finally, you know, a lot of the players here have talked about kind of keeping it simple. You don't install a lot of defensive calls. Can you explain the philosophy on, you know, you try to get these guys doing a few things very well, or are you going to add as time goes on?
There's more that we won't do a lot of defense, even with the little stuff that we might add throughout the year. The strain of the defense comes within the fundamentals and the techniques and the understanding of what we're trying to get them to do and the understanding how teams are going to attack them. That's the strain. And so for us, we'll always take precedence over fundamentals, technique, playing with a free mind, so that way those guys can showcase all the skill that they, all God-given ability that they've been blessed with, so they can run and hit, and play violent, and do all the things that we want as our style.
All right, Robert. Hey, thank you very much for joining me on the 49ers Insider.
You got
podcast.
It. No, thank you very much.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.